This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on today's show, we'll talk with Ron Fisher, who is marking 50 years as a broadcast photographer for WCPO Channel 9. But first, Ohio Governor John Kasich stepped off the presidential campaign trail Wednesday night to give his State of the State address. Cincinnati leaders are developing rules on public access to footage from police body cameras. Kentucky lawmakers are looking for a way to fix the Commonwealth's pension problems. Joining us for a look at those and other stories affecting Greater Cincinnati this week are Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles, WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Managing Editor, Opinion and Engagement, David Holthouse, and River City News Editor and Publisher Michael Monks. You can join us this afternoon, 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Joe, David, and Michael, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks, Mark. Glad to.
Thanks for having me.
And Joe, we'll start with the State of the State speech. Did you notice any differences with this year's State of the State speech? Was the tone different from Governor Kasich because he's running for president?
You know, that was the funny thing. I expected it to be much more presidential. I thought it would get a lot of national media coverage. It really didn't. I thought that he would be much more, you know, speaking to the national audience. He really didn't. There were some things that he said in there, you know, like what's working in Ohio is good for the rest of the country and Ohio is my home and, you know, that kind of thing that he was trying to play into some of the things that he said nationally when he's out on the campaign trail. But, you know, they put this State of the State that was at this all-important time, they put it in Marietta, which was not close to any major media outlet. And it was also a very small venue, so that it was hard to get to, and it was hard to get a lot of people, a lot of reporters in it. And I noticed that when he was holding his State of the State speech, the major networks were mostly tuned in on Trump or talking heads at that point, and that kind of shocked me.
What does Governor Kasich say is going right with the state of Ohio?
Well, he pointed out Medicaid expansion, which a lot of conservatives don't like. But he's pointed out how he's used that to help people, you know, in who have been low income, who haven't had access to health care, and they've been able to get the health care they needed, especially people who have problems, you know, with mental health or drug addiction, things like that. He's talked about the way he's handled schools in Ohio and the more accountability that he's put on the public school system. Now, ironically, he didn't give a whole lot of indication as to what specifically he'd like to see to strengthen up charter schools. He did say he'd like to make them more accountable, but didn't really give any detail there. But he did talk about Ohio moving in the right direction with financially more jobs and the economy being better.
David, what stood out to you about the State of the State address?
Well, Kasich touted his tax reform policies and you know, his practices of lowering taxes, which he has done throughout his term and wants to do some more of. You know, he's fundamentally a conservative, even though in the presidential race he is portraying himself as a moderate. On economic issues, he's certainly very fundamentally conservative and believes in lowering taxes and doing away with regulations. So he touted that. The interesting thing is that, you know, some of his tax policies have been a problem for some of the local governments like Cincinnati and many of the other ones, many of the smaller governments around, because they no longer are getting that tax money back from the state, that those local government funds. And that's been a big issue for local governments in the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. As a result, I think they've had to cut some services, police, fire, that kind of thing to accommodate for the cuts.
Yeah. That's meant about $25 million a year, I think, to the city of Cincinnati. And for smaller governments, it's been a big issue, too.
Joe, what about this call for reforming taxes and giving Ohioans more income tax cuts? This would be, what, the twice now that he's done something like this?
Yes, he's advocated for that twice before. Now, this would be actually accelerating the tax cuts that are already in place and giving more of the tax cuts up front sooner. But, you know, you're absolutely right in the fact that there are communities out there that are saying, hey, we can't afford to function the way we've been functioning on the amount of money we have. And in fact, the Democrats here in the Ohio legislature have pointed out that 31 different communities throughout Ohio are actually in financial distress because they don't have enough money coming in anymore. They can't pass enough in taxes. And they're at the point where some of them don't even have a sufficient fire department or police department to handle the problems that they have in their communities.
And Joe, if I'm not mistaken, before he even called for this Wednesday night, I think the legislature's already been working in this direction, haven't they?
They have. And that's the thing. I mean, you've got the majority Republicans in the legislature who love the tax cuts, and they've been trying to figure out ways to get more of them. But, you know, we've got this huge budget surplus now, and Democrats are saying, hey, you know, it's raining. It's raining in some communities. Shore up these communities before you start going out and getting new proposals and bills that would give more tax cuts.
Yeah, the state's riding on a $2 billion budget surplus right now, which is quite a bit of money. But the governor won't even think about returning some of that money back to local governments. And really all you need to do is drive around and look at the condition of the roads, way overdue on street paving, which is a very basic government service that local governments could use some of that money for.
The other thing that he talked about, too, was passing a congressional redistricting plan, Joe. And what's behind this? Is this a response to what was voted on back in November? I think it was issue one that voters approved, saying they wanted to see some form of redistricting reform.
Yes, it is a response to that. Voters approved that overwhelmingly, and it was backed by majority Republicans and Democrats who came, you know, together and said, hey, we want to pass this and make our legislative districts more fair. They did not do congressional redistricting at that point, and the reason that they didn't, one major reason, was that there was a federal court case to determine whether what they were doing on the legislative level would be okay on the congressional level. Well, that court case has since been ruled upon, and it's okay. They could go ahead and do what they did on the legislative level in congressional redistricting. But a lot of the key leaders in Congress, and especially the Ohio delegation, really don't want congressional redistricting. And they've been pretty outspoken about that. And there are people here in Ohio in our legislature who are listening to that. So Governor Kasich, you know, he says that the gerrymandering should be in the dustbin of history. But if you really look at what some of these lawmakers here are saying is, hey, slow down. Let's have a conversation. Let's not go there yet, because they don't want to deal with that right now. So that's some place that, you know, while Governor Kasich might want it, he might not have the Republican backing to get it done.
Michael, you have any thoughts on what Governor Kasich said the other night?
Well, you know, Northern Kentucky, which is my primary focus area, we got to know Governor Kasich pretty well thanks to the conversations about the Brent Spence Bridge project. He made multiple appearances in Northern Kentucky, two notable ones in Covington alongside former Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear. And, you know, he was in favor of moving forward with the project. He and Governor Beshear had reached a 50-50 agreement on how that was going to go forward, which I think portrayed him to some people as willing to work across the aisle with the Democrat and bolster his position that he's trying to portray as a moderate in a field that includes Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. So while I don't have much comment on what's going on in Columbus, I can certainly speak to the impact and the perception that he has in this part of the region.
Do you know at this point if Governor Bevin and Governor Kasich have formed any kind of a relationship?
Well, Governor Bevin is adamantly opposed to the Brent Spence Bridge project. He has recommended an allocation of funds to maintain it, which is what some critics of the project argued is all that's needed, really, is maybe a fresh coat of paint. And the bridge would be fine after that. And he has recommended that perhaps the state should study what has been called the Cincinnati Eastern Bypass, which would be a new highway system through the southern counties through the southern portion of Kent and Campbell counties and connect to the eastern side of the Cincinnati counties across the Ohio River over there. So I don't anticipate that there will be a similar relationship that was enjoyed between Kasich and Beshear, no.
So, Joe, the big things that that Governor Kasich called for were the tax reform, to also do away with gerrymandering and get some kind of a redistricting reform going. What else did he propose in that State of the State speech?
Well, he said that Ohio can really improve its schools, the school districts here, through more mentoring. And he called for more of that. He also called for more help with preparedness, you know, people stepping out and helping kids read and that sort of thing. He's called for fighting drugs in a different way with more enforcement and new rules. Like, for example, he said time limits on how long you can have a prescription before it's turned in and used and other things that pharmacists could be doing to try to deter drug use. And he's also calling for more treatment there. And those are things that he thinks could help the heroin problem, the opiate problem in Ohio, which, you know, they've done quite a bit in under Kasich's term. A lot has been done to tackle that, but that's still a high priority because Ohio still has a huge drug problem, as does the rest of the nation, as a matter of fact.
Hey, Joe, Kasich still has Ohio as his only win in the race for the GOP presidential nomination, and he came in third in Wisconsin. I'm just curious, what do you think keeps him hanging in there?
Well, you know, that's the thing. He says he's going to stay in until he gets to the convention. And if you look at it right now, he's really not picking up delegates. All he's doing is playing the part of a spoiler. And the other candidates, a lot of people in the Republican Party, have asked him to step out. But maybe he's trying to get more delegates than Marco Rubio had, so that he can make the case that when it gets to Cleveland and there's a contested convention, that, hey, I have more delegates than Marco Rubio, and oh, by the way, I've been here the whole time, and I am the one that polls show can beat Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders in November. And I think he's banking on trying to play, you mentioned this moderate Republican. He's really been trying to play into that role a lot. And I think the reason is that when it gets to the convention and they're looking for someone who is electable in November, he wants to look like that guy.
Yeah, and David, Joe brings up an interesting point. The poll showing that he could beat Hillary Clinton, he could beat Bernie Sanders, that he would do better than Donald Trump or Ted Cruz. So why isn't he gaining any traction?
Yeah, it's well, it's a primary, and you know, the voters now in the Republican primary are sort of, I guess, what you would call the Republican base, very conservative. The turnout is predominantly for Trump and Cruz voters, those people who like those candidates are turning out in droves to vote for them. So he hasn't been able to generate the kind of turnout here in the primary that would lead him to a win. So he's hoping, as Joe says, to emerge as the grown-up in the room in Cleveland at the convention if neither Trump nor Cruz fail to get enough delegates in advance. So his role right now is to keep delegates away from Trump and hope it's an open convention and he can be the grown-up that everyone will turn to at that time.
How realistic is that, though?
Well, you know, there was a poll that came out because the Pennsylvania primary is coming up, and since 1960, no president has been elected to the White House without carrying two of the three states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Florida. We know that Kasich would probably win Ohio, and the poll that came out just last week showed him beating both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders in Pennsylvania as well. So if he were able to last until the convention and something crazy goes down and he emerges as the nominee, I think he's the Republicans' best shot at winning the White House.
Didn't do so great in Kentucky, though, did he?
He would in a general election, though.
Okay. Well, we'd like to say thanks to Joe for joining us this afternoon. Joe,
well, thank you for having me.
Stopping by with us. Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles. And coming up, we'll have a look at the other local stories making the news this week. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us with a look at the stories affecting Greater Cincinnati this week are WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Managing Editor, Opinion and Engagement, David Holthouse, and River City News Editor and Publisher, Michael Monks. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Michael, start us off. Get us acquainted with River City News. Great publication.
I appreciate that, yeah. Mark. If you're not following us, we are an ambitious online, digital mostly. We experiment with print.
That's right. You're not radio. You're not TV. You're not a newspaper.
We're all those things rolled into one, really. We do video. We do podcasting and digital news reporting online, of course, primarily about the urban core of Northern Kentucky. So we focus heavily on Covington, Newport, Bellevue, Dayton, and Ludlow. But we've been branching out into the suburbs, too. We now cover about 15 different city councils every month, and we cover 6 different school boards. We cover Kenton and Boone County, Kenton and Campbell County governments, and breaking news of the day. I mean, we have really filled the void that's been left by some of the shrinking media that's out there.
Yeah. How long have you been in existence now?
I started as a blog 5 years ago. We're coming up on our 5th birthday, basically. And a year and a half after starting it, I realized that I might have had a business opportunity for myself. So we transitioned into a more traditional digital newspaper format, raised some capital, hired a couple of people, and now we're going full throttle.
Well, what's the big story you've been following this week at River City News?
Well, you know, I know the entire region is captivated in this this heroin epidemic that we're all facing, and it looks like finally we're close to having a needle exchange program in Northern Kentucky. And the General Assembly in Kentucky just last year in 15 made it legal to operate these things. But what it requires is that the county and a municipality must approve this thing. So a few weeks ago, Covington gave an okay to allow a mobile needle exchange operation to operate on the campus of St. Elizabeth Hospital near the interstate in Covington. And Kenton County approved it a couple of weeks later, but they altered one of the requirements that Covington put in. Covington demanded that users who come up to use the needle exchange program, they've got to be tested for diseases.
So it was mandatory testing.
It was mandatory testing. And the county, based on legal advice, thought that was probably unconstitutional and decided that they, while they appreciated the sentiment, they made the testing optional. So they approved their ordinance. That meant it went back to the city commission in Covington this past Tuesday. And by a vote of 4-1, Covington agreed with the county. And what they're waiting on is a third county. So the Northern Kentucky Health Department will operate this program on the campus of St. Elizabeth. And the Northern Kentucky Health Department serves 4 counties, Boone, Kenton, Campbell, and Grant. And the Covington ordinance, which was agreed to by Kenton County, mandates that 3 of 4 counties must participate before it shows up. And that traces back to Covington's argument that it carries too much of a burden of the region's social service agencies. So Grant County and the city of Williamstown already have a program in operation. Covington is prepared. They're now waiting on Campbell and or Boone to join up in that.
It seems like, David, on the Ohio side, we're a lot farther ahead when it comes to needle exchange programs.
Yeah, we've had the Cincinnati Exchange Project has been operating for 2 or 3 years, I think, at some locations in Cincinnati. I believe they have 2 or 3 locations right now, and there's some other ones under consideration. Coring Township is actively considering one now. And there's a great concern among public health officials that the heroin epidemic will lead to an epidemic of HIV and hepatitis C through needle sharing. So that's what the needle exchanges are all about, is to prevent other diseases, namely HIV and hepatitis C, from occurring because of needle use.
Yeah, and in your role at WCPO.com, you're primarily responsible for opinion and editorials that come through there. Right. You took had a really good stance a few weeks back about treating heroin addiction as a disease,
right,
as opposed to treating it strictly as just a law enforcement problem.
Right. Yeah, it is a brain disease, and I think a lot of medical professionals see it that way. I mean, heroin will actually change the structure of your brain, and it makes it very difficult for an addict to make rational decisions. So they will do anything to get the drug, steal, lie, cheat. Everything else becomes secondary to getting heroin. So in that sense, it is a disease of the brain, and to treat it that way would take medication and long-term medical, having a doctor's supervision will really change the way addicts are treated now from law enforcement or short-term treatment to a longer-term treatment, and more medical professionals are coming around, and even law enforcement professionals are coming around to see it that way.
And more money is apparently coming available. I talked to Senator Mitch McConnell a couple of weeks ago. He was in Covington, and I asked him, I said, you know, we're throwing a lot of we're shooting a lot of bullets at this problem, whether it's through the prosecutor's office, whether it's through a couple of the county jails, whether it's through the school systems or different treatment programs that are available now, the forthcoming needle exchange. But we're still seeing overdoses increase and addicted babies, the numbers of that increasing. So what are we going to do? And he said, you know, all the federal government can do is throw more money at it. And he said somewhere in the neighborhood of $400 million is going to be coming available soon in the form of grants that people can apply for. So I don't think we're out of the woods in any way yet. But
this is a long-term battle.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. And the, Obama, I think, has proposed $1 billion in his budget for treatment. But you know how his budgets are typically treated on Congress. But that's what he wants to do.
David, what have you been following at WCPO.com this week?
Well, we had opening day on Monday, which was a lot of fun, and
Cincinnati's unofficial holiday.
Cincinnati's unofficial holiday.
When is it going to become official? That's what I always ask.
Right. Well, we had editorialized that it become an official holiday, and I actually asked Mayor Cranley if he could do that, and he wasn't prepared to do that. I talked to the governor's office, and they weren't interested in doing that. Of course, that would mean, you know, government workers having a paid day off and so forth. But we actually did get a resolution officially from the governor's office recognizing Cincinnati Reds opening day. So that was fun. But yeah, you know, it's part of the tradition to make it an unofficial holiday. I think it's just kind of part of the fun, you know. Everyone just kind of goofs off that day and takes a half day off of work, that kind of thing. So that is really part of the tradition too, I think.
Except for journalists and reporters, because I mean, it's an extremely busy day for all of us because we're out there taking pictures and following the parade, following the game, following everything that goes on.
Right,
it's,
right.
It's quite a hectic day.
Yeah, we were, I mean, at CPO, we were broadcasting it live, the parade. We were doing Facebook Live. We were tweeting it. We were writing stories about it. Yeah, we were all over it. So we were working hard.
Mm. Now, I'd like to shift to a different topic. The really dramatic thing that happened on I-75 southbound, Glendale police officer Josh Hilling, he's getting a lot of praise for how he handled that confrontation with a knife-wielding man. That happened last week. Yeah. But this week, people are starting to say that was amazing. Mm-hmm. What happened there? That he didn't kill him. He shot him one time, subdued him. I mean, I'm like a lot of other people looking at this. I don't know how he was able to pull that off. That was remarkable.
He showed amazing restraint. Yeah, the prosecutor's office released the video this week, and so we were able to see what happened. It was a body cam video. But yeah, the restraint the officer showed there was incredible. And credit to him for, he fired once and it did not stop him, but slowed him down. Eventually he was subdued. Yeah, that was a great police work. And, you know, there's an issue still of, how to treat those body cam videos, and that's at the Ohio Supreme Court now, WCPO, The Enquirer, and I think all the TV stations in Cincinnati have sued to get immediate access to body cam videos, and the prosecutor's office has claimed they're investigative in nature, so they won't release them until their investigation is complete. So the Supreme Court should be deciding that at some point in the near future. But that'll be a big deal because more and more agencies are using body cam videos now.
It was very helpful in the Ludlow police shooting from last year. Again, though, they didn't release the cameras until the prosecutor's office and the state police concluded their investigation, which cleared the Ludlow officer involved. But when you watch these things, you have no choice but to have greater respect for the position that law enforcement officers find themselves in. I mean, things change in a split second, and suddenly they're being fired at, and they return fire, and they're so quick to have to do those things. These body cameras are very helpful in showing the public just how dangerous these situations are, but from a legal sense, they're very important in either clearing or prosecuting an officer who may have been in the wrong.
This is Cincinnati Edition. Thanks to Joya Sen for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. And we're looking at the stories affecting Greater Cincinnati this week with WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Managing Editor, Opinion and Engagement, David Holthouse, and River City News Editor and Publisher, Michael Monks. You can join us at 513-419-7100. Michael, how many police departments in Northern Kentucky are using body cameras at this point? Yeah, you have any idea?
You know, I can't tell you the exact number that are using them, but the number is increasing, and so is the way that they deal with it. I know Kenton County recently added some to their department, and one of the things that's interesting about this is the way that it's affecting the budgets of the police departments is they understand the need, but this is data that has to be stored somewhere the way that you would store any other file. So you're seeing RFPs go out from the various governments so that, I mean, there's a whole business boom out there now for these tech companies that provide this type of material. So there are police departments that are needing to store many, many hours of footage that come off of their body cams. So we've seen a lot of discussions about that in Kenton County in the fiscal court there and in the city of Covington as well. So how long do they keep these files? How long are they supposed to be available for, you know, little Weasley guys like us who might request that stuff on a whim? And when is it okay to delete those files? But that's a lot of data.
I know Cincinnati's been going back and forth on this too, because they were trying to decide when do you release it publicly. For instance, in OVI cases, can you require that if anybody wants to see it, they have to go back to the prosecutor's office? So I know they've been turning this over in their heads a lot too, David.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues with it, and you know, the storage. What do you do with it is one of them, and the cost around that. You know, a half hour video is a lot of data to store. And just the access. I mean, if you look at the case recently in Chicago where the Chicago police were able to keep a video under wraps for over 2 years, almost 3 years. And then when it finally was released, it showed, you know, the officer may have, you know, made a mistake in shooting the suspect. It caused some protests and so forth in Chicago. I don't think you want that to happen. I mean, we've taken the position that these ought to be immediately accessible, and that they should be treated just like an incident report, which is immediately available, or a dash cam video, which typically are released fairly quickly. Not always, but usually they are. They're really, our position is there's really no difference with a body cam video.
Mm-hmm. Michael, big thing in Kentucky right now, the budget, the state budget. I mean, where does that stand?
Well, they're still negotiating down there in Frankfort. It's an interesting city to watch when the General Assembly is in session, and particularly so here in the age of Governor Matt Bevin. This is his first term. This is his first General Assembly session, and he is very social media savvy. They call him Governor Selfie. Because and I don't mean to insult the governor, certainly, but I think that's a warranted nickname, because he is a prolific selfie taker, and he you know, that tug of war that's going on down there with him, there's no love lost already. You know, they went right in with some very traditional Kentucky politics, and you know, the lines drawn in the sand. You know, he put up a Facebook video a few weeks ago on a Monday, and he walked into the House chamber, and the House is controlled by the Democrats. The Senate's controlled by the Republicans in Frankfort, and Bevin's a Republican. So he walked into the Democrat-controlled state House with his camera and showed that it was empty. It was like, it's Monday. We've got budget problems. We've got big people problems to deal with.
I remember
with.
That. Mm-hmm.
And where are they all? And apparently it's tradition that the General Assembly
on Mondays.
He just
got there before they started.
He was a little early to the day, because Kentucky's you know, geographically large, and it takes some of these legislators a while to return from the weekend break. And the House was able to respond with pictures from like a committee room where they were meeting about the budget. You're like, oh, we're at work. You just don't know how the process works. So Frankfort's probably worse off than it's been in a while in terms of decorum and rapport that's developing between people. At a local level, I mean, the stakes are very high, though. I mean, you know, Matt Bevin has ordered that all public universities take a 4.5% budget cut immediately. And that hurts schools like Northern Kentucky University, which already argues consistently every year that they are not treated fairly in terms of the state budget. They had asked this year for the legislature to consider what's called outcomes-based funding, where schools like in KU, which produce more graduates or a higher percentage of graduates than some of the other better-funded schools in the state, should be funded accordingly. Gateway Community and Technical College, which has a few campuses in northern Kentucky, is part of the Kentucky Community and Technical College System, KCTCS. They may have to respond with increased tuition to fund some of these sorts of things. So the stakes are very high in higher education. That is probably the biggest sticking point for a lot of the legislators down there.
Well, David and Michael, thank you for joining me today.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Managing Editor, Opinion and Engagement, David Holthouse, and River City News Editor and Publisher, Michael Monks.